that social media provides, some things are good and some not so good, but one of the things it provides is an opportunity to vent, to rant, to rage, to speculate, and let's face it, to be mean, almost anonymously and without consequence, or at least without the kind of consequence you would have if, say, you were speaking that way to your mother. Many people, myself included, lament over how divided we have become as a nation. But know this, that division is by design. Fascism, authoritarianism, or if you don't like those names, let's say less than benevolent power seeking, relies on neighbor turning against neighbor. All throughout history, this is how such power is assumed and maintained. In extreme cases, neighbors tattle to authorities about their neighbors, turning their neighbors in, betraying them, sometimes with deadly consequences. With the advent of social media, this is even easier to do. And after accusing someone, you can retreat into your lonely little silo again without consequence or accountability. Don't. Recently, on a windy night, our American flag here at the church ripped, so the next day I took it down, as is proper to do when caring for the flag. Then I noticed that the clasp holding it was broken in half. We had on hand a replacement flag, but we needed a new clasp. While our flag was down, someone posted on social media that St. Luke's Church was making an un-American political statement. What was interesting is that there were, followed that, 94 comments from all sides. It used to be that displaying the American flag was a way to express patriotism and respect for our country. I wondered as I read all those comments, is it still? Has it come to mean something else? Predictably, the discourse became no longer about the flag, but attacking people who said this or that about it. The reading of these 94 comments, while somewhat interesting in a sociology kind of way, did my soul no earthly good. In our Lenten book group, discussing the book for such a time as this, the author makes the claim that you don't have to go looking for neighbors. You just have to be one. Personally, I am taking this to heart in the most literal way possible. Literally inviting my next door neighbors, yes, the ones near my house, actual neighbors, over for a barbecue as soon as it warms up. They don't have to accept my invitation. But today, I'm asking the real question, how can I love my neighbor if I've never met them? Social media and cultural shifts have made us more and more isolated, increasingly divided and unhappy. Yet we all have actual neighbors. So reach out, start there. Neighbor is not an abstract concept. Who is my neighbor is a question as old as civilization itself, at least as old as the Gospels. Become a neighbor. Become the change you seek. Inviting your neighbors over is one step of resistance against all that divides us. Our very survival as a species depends on collaboration, slow to wash the feet of his friends. Into the midst of the trouble and isolation in which we find ourselves, Jesus demonstrates there is another way. And he says, this is the way. I am the way. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. It would have been helpful, a little easier to swallow, and maybe a little easier to brush off if Jesus had stopped there. But of course he did not. Though familiar by now, Jesus' words are not benign, because when he said love one another, he then added, as I have loved you. This changes the commandment in a dramatic way. As I have loved you, you should wash one another's feet. I wonder why Peter did not get up right then, being kind of literal like he is portrayed in the Gospels. I wonder why Peter did not get up, take off his robe, wrap a towel around his waist, and repeat the gesture. Why didn't Peter do this? Because he was stunned. He was speechless. Because when Jesus washed their feet, it wasn't a gesture, not even a symbolic act. It was instead an act of pure love. And as such, it can't very well be repeated. This is scandalous, of course. Our soul does not want to be face to face with a God who is less than all powerful. The spectacle of a kneeling God is devastating. No, let God be seated on a throne holding all the power. Let us be the ones to bend the knee, to kneel. No wonder Peter is horrified when he sees Emmanuel, God is with us, the long-awaited Messiah, kneeling at his feet, bending low. I wonder, could this toweling off feet even be called an act of devotion? But wait, we are supposed to be the ones demonstrating our devotion to God, right? Is God devoted to us? Does God adore us? Does God love us tenderly, intimately? On that night, the love of God for humans was never made so plain, so direct, so personal. We might do well also to mull it over less, and to love more. I give you